Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, August 8th, 2014. My name is Angela Walton-Raji and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, how are you everyone? We are well into August. Wow. We're sort of, beginning the wind down. Oh, isn't that terrible? I hate to think about that because I do enjoy summer. But this has been, I must say, kind of an unusual summer. It hasn't been extremely hot. It has been warm, but really not extremely hot. And so a lot of our days are in the low 80s. We've had a lot of rain, though, which I guess is a good thing. I hope people out west have been getting enough rain as well, because it does get, I know, quite hot there. But here on the East Coast, it's been pretty pleasant for the most part. And, of course, this is August, reunion times, I know, started last week as well. Things are going on. I know the Fontaines are having a great time this weekend on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. But so many other things are going on as well. I've been busy this week. I've had a lot of fun just playing around with the databases and getting a little bit of research in. Also have been researching with a friend on another Eastern Shore of Maryland family. The Curtises are going to be having a major gathering at the end of the month also in Maryland. But I want to just share with you some things that I've been working on, been doing as well. And for those of you who are on Facebook, I hope that you have noticed that there is an ongoing thread or an ongoing sort of posting or series of posts on the Afrogenius group on Facebook. There is a surname roll call. And I have to mention this only because so many times in social media, there are so many distractions. We know how that can be. And I don't mean the games that sometimes people play, but people posting articles of multiple topics. And sometimes they may get involved with maybe a community topic or maybe a brick wall that they may find. And the threads can become quite interesting and quite complex. But I do like the fact that there is currently an ancestor surname roll call underway. It's a great place to sort of have your chance to look around at the Afrogenius community. And we're well over 3,000 people in the Facebook community group. Well, it is, of course, a great opportunity just to connect with other researchers, and new people are coming into the genealogy community all the time. And it does help to post many of these queries that you may have, surnames that are of interest to you. You never know who's going to see them and who may reach out and connect with you because there's something in common that they may find that the two of you may have. So anyway, take a look at that ongoing thread. Join in. Post your family surnames. It's useful to post not just a general surname. If you have a name like Watkins or Hendricks, well, don't just say Watkins or Hendricks. Say where they're from. So if you're from Florida, people from New Jersey won't be, you know, plaguing you with questions about a family that may not have ties there. But anyway, join in the fun. It's just really neat to see that. I also want to remind you, you know, there are so many components to social media, and Facebook, of course, being one of them. There are different types of gatherings on Facebook. The community Facebook page, as I said, it's well over 3,000 strong and still growing. But there's also the community, or I shouldn't say community, I'll say just the Afrogenius page. And that's more of a page where you can go see some interesting postings, particularly biographies and remarkable portraits of individuals who've made their mark in their various communities and some rare African American history. Now, the page, the Afrogenius Facebook page has over 97,000 likes. And certainly, you are encouraged to visit that page at least once a week and see what's up there, see what's new, see what individuals have been sharing. Some very rare and unique community history is there. So, you know, explore it. I know we're creatures of habit, but don't just use Facebook as a place to say hi, play a few games, you know, look and see what's the latest query and go. Remember to go to the page itself and take a look. You never know what's going to be there. And for those of you who are really active in documenting your community's history, wow. It's fantastic. You never know what you're going to see. And you also have a new platform to share some rare information that you may have found. How many times are you looking at something and it catches your attention and you see it and you're going, oh my goodness. And you may not have a blog from which you can talk about it, or maybe your blog has a different kind of focus. What greater place? Put it on the Facebook page and on the Facebook Afrogenius page in particular. I guess in particular because there's such a huge community of people who admire the page and who appreciate the page. Over 97,000. You can't get much larger than that. That's really certainly a fabulous, fabulous resource for you. And many times people don't realize that social media, yes, it can be a social outlet for you, but it can also be a platform from which you can share and from which you can learn. So, you know, by all means, take a look at that. I really hope that you will explore it. Now, speaking of communities, and as I mentioned, some people who are doing something unique on their own community and documenting their community's history. Now, I know many of you are familiar with the book, The Washingtons of Wessington. Well, last night on Bernice Bennett's show, Research the National Archives and Beyond, she had her guest, John Baker, who, of course, is the author of The Washingtons of Wessington. What a wonderful interview. Now, I urge you to listen to the interview for two reasons. One is just the wonderful story itself of John Baker and his work to document those individuals who were enslaved on the Wessington Plantation in Tennessee. The Wessington Plantation at one time was the largest tobacco plantation in America, and it was just one of the largest estates in general during certainly the 18th and 19th century. But the reason why I want you to listen to it, because there is a lesson. There's a wonderful lesson that comes from John Baker's story and John Baker's research. His ancestors, he learned as a young boy. We're talking, what, middle school, and through the high school years, he began to really understand his family's ties to the Wessington Plantation. But he spent 30 years researching not just his family. He researched all of the families with ties to Wessington. So now what does he have? He has an entire cadre of stories to tell. You can mention a family to him. He can talk about the family and talk about their history. And this is so special, and this is the lesson. The lesson really is the fact that he just did not say, oh, this is my ancestor's story, my ancestral story, and tell the story of just his ancestors and just the people that had appeared in a school textbook, and to just say how interesting that that's my family portrait that appeared, and I'm so fascinated to tell you my family history. He saw the larger story. He saw the story of a community. He became the voice of that community. He became the voice and is the voice of those who were enslaved on that estate. And especially because he was working with an estate that was so large, it was a community of people. And he, I think, has given us a model to follow. If you come from a community, and all communities are unique, let's face it, just as every household is unique, every street is unique, well, every community does have a unique story. The lesson from John Baker is that, well, of course, number one, tell the story of what happened, but tell the story, the larger story that encompassed all of those dimensions in which your ancestors lived. You know, when you find them in that 1870 census, if your ancestors were enslaved, that's the first time they were enumerated in many cases as free people and as a family with the husband, the wife, the children. And so you find them there. But they're not just one-dimensional people on a page. They had neighbors, they had associates, they had individuals with whom they did business, from whom they had to purchase things, and to whom they perhaps sold things as well. Well, the lesson from John Baker is to tell all of their stories. You know, when our ancestors were coming of age into young adulthood, they didn't go across the county or across the state to go courting. Sometimes great-great-grandpa just went down the road to a neighboring farm to court the young lady and eventually to marry. Well, the fact is that these are the stories, and people had a relationship with each other. So hopefully people will begin to realize the story is not just the story of one soul family. It's the story of the interrelated families and how those individuals knew each other, met each other, did business with each other, worked with each other, prayed together with each other, and had so many interactions. And that's what I particularly just appreciated hearing and appreciated listening to that interview last night. As I said, this was last night on Blog Talk Radio on Bernice Bennett's program. You can always find her show every week on blogtalkradio.com/Bernice Bennett. And of course, the show airs every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can always catch it in the archived version as well. But anyway, take really a listen to that, and I hope that you'll get inspired by all means. Well, this week, as I said, I've been playing around with some databases, and about a month or so ago, I had written an article, I think I mentioned it also on the podcast, when I had found my great-grandmother's name on a database, and it's a kind of a lesser-known database on Ancestry of the World War I mothers who made the pilgrimage to Europe after World War I. They were determined eligible to make a pilgrimage to France to visit the gravesite of either their son or their husband. And my great-grandmother was on that database. Now, she did not travel, but she was certainly in the latter years of her life. This pilgrimage took place in 1930. So she was really, towards the end of her life. She was not going to be able to travel alone to New York and then travel to France and then get back and then get back to Arkansas. She died maybe 2 or 3 years after that. But nevertheless, she was one of the women who was determined to be eligible to make the pilgrimage, so her name was on that database. Well, of course, that's another story, and I wrote about that on my blog, how the women came to travel, also what happened to the women of color, the women, African-American mothers who also made the trip, and there were about 300 or so of them. I am going to be compiling, actually, from that database, I am hopefully going to be able to compile a list of as many people that I can identify who did make the pilgrimage, who were of African ancestry. Now, it's kind of a funny way to sort of work with the database itself, because one has to enter their name. But I also realized that there are some immigration records that indicate when some of the ships returned And the African American Gold Star mothers traveled as a group. We know the military was still segregated, and so were the mothers. They were segregated as well. But there's never been a composite list of all of the women, African American women, who did make the pilgrimage. It's a fascinating story, and I feel that it might be a story that's possibly lost to many families. And so I have been working on that as well and hope to be able to compile a list, I'll say soon, maybe by the end of the month or so, of as many of the African American Gold Star mothers who did make the trip abroad, or at least who were deemed eligible, because many people didn't go, and some didn't go by choice. Some didn't go because they could not either afford the journey or make the journey because of perhaps being advanced in years. Also, some did not make the choice or chose not to travel because of the fact that they were not being given the same accommodations as the white Gold Star mothers, which did happen. And so that's also an interesting story. But the database itself, I am going to try and work on that database to try and determine as many of the African American Gold Star mothers as possible who were at least deemed as eligible and who are on that database, because I think it is something that is worthwhile. A question for all of you. Those of you who are either going to or who have already been to those family reunions, I am curious as to how some of you are documenting that history. Last week I gave a couple of shout outs to people I know who are having reunions. And one of the things that I have come to appreciate is that anytime there's a gathering of family, that it's a wonderful opportunity to display the history. And I know I have had a conversation, and I had a conversation recently with someone, in terms of asking for methods of displaying the family history without boring the family with the history. And I thought that was such an interesting kind of question, because we all know what it is like. We love what we do. We love our research. But we know that plenty of people in the family really don't always care or have the same degree of enthusiasm. So what's a great way to display the family history? Well, last week, I know a friend of mine who was on her family reunion in North Carolina. She took some of her skills that she has. She's a very crafty person and has made some amazing scrapbooks for the family. But these scrapbooks are family history, heritage scrapbooks. So what she has done, she has taken images of individuals, written small biographies about them, and then included on their history page a biography of them, meaning not just information, not an obituary, but she's actually taken authentic documents that reflect the family's history. And so if, for example, there was an ancestor, for example, who died in the 1920s, she had a photograph of the person. She had a small degree of data about that person in terms of, dates of birth and death and marriage and children. But she also included some documents where she found that person, whether they were census records, whether it could have been a death certificate, whether it could have been a synopsis of an obituary that may have appeared someplace. It's a way of sharing some information that, if no one else, at least the descendants of that one particular ancestor might particularly appreciate. And it's kind of a neat thing in terms of looking at methods of enjoying the family history, celebrating the history. And what I liked, she was also able to combine some of her own self with the family. And when I say her own self, she was able to share some of her own skills. She's very good at crafting. She's very good at not just scrapbooking. She's getting now orders from people. In fact, can you make a duplicate scrapbook, but kind of make it unique to my family? So these are sort of things that are emerging. But I was excited to see what she did with some of her things using her Cricut cutter and Xyron cutter and some of the things that scrapbookers use. But she was making special appliques that she's putting on commemorative materials that were given out as door prizes to members of the family who were in attendance. And I guess sometimes it's a neat way of just expressing the history. I have started having fun with another social media platform of late, and I've started having a lot of fun with Pinterest. Now, those who are in my local genealogical society chapter heard me give a presentation a week or so ago about using social media and genealogy and how you can combine what you happen to like with some of your other passions and express them. And one of the, I guess, areas of focus besides social media, such as Facebook or Twitter, I talked about Pinterest, how I have different types of boards. And I must say, I'm totally enjoying that. This is an arena that 3 months ago, four months ago, I never would have ever dreamt of creating a Pinterest board for myself. But I started to realize the applications when I attended a technology workshop and there was another genealogist who shared her interests. And all of a sudden, I got it. It clicked. I realized that I was able to take some of my different sub-interests and just zero in, make some visual cues for myself, and pin them to my own created Facebook boards. And I'm finding it to be such a surprisingly pleasant outlet. I have one, for example, of the U.S. Colored Troops. That's an area of interest. One on photographs of U.S. Colored Troops, but also one of historical drawings from historical newspapers of the United States Colored Troops. I have one, I became interested, and I'm still working on a project with nurses, women of color who served as nurses and laundresses in the Civil War. And I have found a small record set at the National Archives. In fact, I will be going back to work on that this coming week. Well, it's been quite exciting for me to use Pinterest as a platform to even display that kind of information. I have started I have come to realize that sometimes when you see something that catches your attention and you realize that not much has been told about it, it clicks to me. Well, why not make a Pinterest board? Somebody might care out there. Well, I created a Pinterest board when I found this list of nurses, and I began to realize, you know, not enough has ever been written about women who entered the medical profession. I hope at some point to have some information also on women who became doctors. And I do not have a medical background. I'm an educator. But I still realize the need for some of these biographies and these stories of women to be told. But imagine you are literally maybe a day into freedom and you realize there's a need to tend to people who are wounded, particularly many men of color who were wounded needed care. And you were not going to find many people who were going to assist with their care necessarily. Well, I became interested in those women who served as nurses. So that's an ongoing project. I've only found two images of women who were nurses during the Civil War. But I have found some other pictures that were so dramatic to me and just so fascinating of women who did provide health care. I've created a board called Vintage Photographs of African American Nurses. And I realize, wow, just as much as we need our educators and our leaders, we need those who provide healthcare. So I created a board there. I'm a quilter. I have a board there for African American quilters. And so many things. Whatever is you, whatever reflects your interest, your passion, your taste, you have an opportunity to just express it. And I'm having fun with it. And it's not a database, but it is a platform, a social media platform that I'm just finding is delightful. And of course, you may find years from now, someone else may end up visiting your particular board and saying, wow, there's something here. Or, gee, that might be my ancestor. The rewards, are just, you can't imagine what they are, because sometimes they're just so miraculous that they happened. And by the way, I have to share something with you. It just happened today, this morning. I have been researching, for the last 15 or so years, one particular line in my own family from Northwest Arkansas. And one of my ancestors was a slave, a house slave, in a small family in a little town called Dripping Springs. And so I posted some information up recently. Well, I'm saying recently. I posted some information up, it was 12 years ago, to be exact, and some information seeking any info that anyone may have. I posted the name of the slaveholder. I posted the name of her husband and of her daughter and her son-in-law. And this was on a RootsWeb list. As you know, RootsWeb is now part of Ancestry. And someone was recently on Ancestry today, saw my post about Mary Walters, Josiah Harrell, and this person wrote to me and said, I'm a direct descendant of Mary Walters and Josiah Harrell. I saw your post. Here is Mary Walters' daughter's death certificate. If you think it's the same family, let me know. Now, this is interesting because I'm looking for information about the slaveholding family. I just hope that there's some a piece of paper, a will, or something that might shed some light on my own ancestors' history. Now, this is one of those delicate areas, and the question is, how do you contact a slaveholder's family without becoming threatening, I guess, maybe as many people might feel that such a query might be. Well, I just asked for general information about the family itself, and I was surprised that a direct descendant of this family has contacted me. My goal is just to find out, are there any papers, old papers, anything that you may have to share. And it can be a challenge, because that is a question. How do you contact the slaveholder's family? Because many times there is that fear. There's that fear that someone is going to suddenly, demand keys to the house hey, you owe my family X, Y, and Z. When that's really not the case that genealogists have. But I was surprised. This is a, 2000. This is a 14-year-old query that I put up on a RootsWeb board when it was RootsWeb and not attached to Ancestry. But thanks to the merger with Ancestry, I got a reply today. And one just never knows what will happen. The lesson is, of course, put the queries out there. However, I recommend that you put the query in as a broad category as you can. So one may generate a response, start a dialogue, and, you never know what will be shared with you. And, of course, sometimes you may be in a situation where you will get an out-of-the-blue query from someone else. I have a slaveholder descendant who contacted me from out-of-the-blue once. This person saw my name in a Historical Society journal and reached out to me. And, wow, what a joy that was. And we still are in contact with each other, and I still appreciate it. So, anyway, oh, my goodness, I'm just looking at the time. And it is time for me to wind it down yet again. But, this has been a good week for me in terms of just, getting a chance to explore some databases more in depth. And I hope that you are still continuing to index, by the way. Please join. There's some new states that have been added, by the way, on Family Search and the Freedmen's Bureau project. All those millions of pages that are popping up, please join that indexing project. It is ongoing, and we need as much assistance as possible. And I appreciate you for taking out time of your busy schedule as well and listening to me. In the meantime, summer does continue. We probably have another good month of summer left. And it doesn't look as if the dog days of August are here yet, so I guess that's a good thing. Enjoy. Hope you get to the beach. Hope you get outside. Hope you have a chance to enjoy the family reunion if you're going to one soon. And in the meantime, my goodness, wow. Of course, you know what I'm going to say. Keep researching, everyone. Keep documenting. And yes, always keep sharing what you find. Be well and be safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.